I'd like to call the Carson City Charter Review Committee to order. And if we could start with our roll call.
Chairperson Robertson?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Metesca?
Here.
Member Schaefer?
Here.
Member Welch?
Here.
Member Fegan?
Here.
Member Messina?
Here.
Member Steele?
Here.
Quorum is present.
This time we'd like to have public comment. Public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any item not on the agenda that is relevant to or within the authority of the Charter Review Committee. In order for members of the public to participate in the committee's consideration of an agenda item, the committee strongly encourages members of the public to comment on an agenda item during the item itself. No action may be taken on a matter raised under public comment unless the item has been specifically included on the agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Do we have any public comment? Seeing none, we'll move on to the approval of our minutes. Any discussion on the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes for last meeting.
All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? No. When we move on to our agenda items, 6A for possible action. And that is to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the Charter regarding a more transparent way of determining if there is a conflict of interest for an item coming before the Board of Supervisors. And I believe we have from the District Attorney.
Yeah, District Attorney Jason Woodbury, and you have our sort of analysis on that. The ethics in government law really prescribes the exclusive method to determine whether or not a member of a public body has a conflict of interest. It's our interpretation that state law occupies the field of ethics in government, so to speak, and that we would not be legally authorized to establish any sort of body to do what's proposed in this agenda item. The problem would be that if you ever had a conflict between what this special group was saying versus what the ethics in government law said as interpreted by us or as interpreted by the ethics commission, that would be a real problem. I mean, there would be no real legal answer to that. So it's our interpretation that the existing law occupies the field of this. It provides the commission that makes these kinds of determinations, and that this would not be something that would be within the purview of this body to recommend.
Thank you. Any discussion from the board members?
I agree. I think that the intent of the recommendation was to remove any conflict for any kind of a board member in claiming that there's a conflict on their own, saying that somebody else could identify that there was a conflict of interest. And I'm not sure that that's really appropriate, and it's outside of the law. I think that we leave it up to the individuals to disclose their conflicts. And, you know, to put that in, you know, somebody else's hands, some other committee or some other individuals to say, oh, I think you have a conflict, I think is just opening up a can of worms. So, but because it's out of our purview and it would have to go to the legislature, I just don't think this is a major item of discussion.
I might be reading the request a little differently. And the person submitting the request is not here to explain it, so I have to interpret it a little bit. First time I read it, I just thought he was asking for some, when a board member recuses themselves or disqualifies their vote based on conflict, that they explain why, not that he's really challenging the conflict rules, just that there's an explanation or a record of what criteria that board member is applying to recuse himself. And I don't know if this is on track or not, but I went to the city policies and procedures, and there is some information on conflicts in there, but it's pretty general. And I'm not even sure if a board member is disclosing that whether they're applying the criterion in the policies and procedures manual or going straight to the Nevada revised statutes or disqualifying themselves on advice of the district attorney's office. So I think that's what the request is really getting at, just clarification on what criterion that person is applying. But I, again, I'm not sure that's part of the Charter Review Committee.
And I'll just indicate that the Ethics and Government Law, NRS Chapter 281, does require exactly what you're saying. It doesn't allow a member to simply say, I have a conflict of interest, I'm going to be abstaining. They actually have to set a record of what exactly that conflict of interest was so the public is aware of that. And from time to time, we will consult with a member of a public body about a situation and offer our input with that. But they are required to disclose the nature of the conflict, you know, publicly.
That would seem to address the concern, honestly. So with that in mind, I'm not sure that this would be an action item for this board.
If that's the opinion of the board, is there any more comment? I guess there would be no action, I guess, on this item.
That you don't have to take action, but it is agendized for possible action. So I think this is one where you do have to take public comment.
Would anybody like to comment? So do we have to take a vote, or can we just...
If there is no motion, then there's no need to. Right. You can move on to the next one.
Is there a motion then? Since there is none, we'll move on to the next agenda item 6B, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to Section 7.010 of the Charter to add the language, publish an annual report indicating compliance with the provisions of Section 7.010 detailing each line item of public debt no less than 30 days prior to approval of each fiscal year budget. And this was submitted by Chris Carver.
I guess reading this, I wasn't sure why it was necessary to do an annual report, since the annual audit talks about public debt, and if you're in violation, it has to be stated in the audited statement. So I'm not sure is there a requirement, or is this an annual that's been done in the past? It just seems a little extra work for the staff when it's being tested by the auditors. So.
I think it looks to me like it's a very good idea. I think that we probably already have it available on the city website somewhere. I don't know if we do.
Nancy Paulson, CFO for Carson City. Actually, each line of the public debt is included in the budget document each year also. So the tentative is due April 15th to the state, and then the finals due June 1st. In both of those documents.
So if the issue is compliance, what I found was that the city is already in compliance with this, because there's actually four independent bodies that verify this. The Department of Taxation, if you go to their website, the report's available right on their website. It's also reported by the auditor and the CAFR. And local debt management, and also the fourth would be bond council, right? So I just didn't see it as an action item for us. Since, I mean, compliance, that issue has already been addressed.
And also on August 1st of each year, the city has to prepare their debt management policy, and it's included in there too, and that's due to taxation.
I would just add that it looks to me in Article 7 of our charter, it doesn't speak to compliance or how the city would comply with that. It, the way I read this, it says the city shall not incur indebtedness over a certain amount, and talks about the limitations on that debt. But once again, are there policies and procedures in the city that already dictate, or are there NRS statutes that dictate how that is reported? It looks to me like this request is putting into our charter a requirement that might not exist somewhere else, but it must exist. As you know, the city to operate, there must be a statute that indicates where we'd report the level of debt that we have against our tax rolls. So the way I read Section 7 is that we shall not incur debt above a certain limit, but nowhere in there does it say that as a city we're going to require a compliance document or a report stating that. We all know that there might be some avenues where that is reported, but it isn't dictated in our charter. So are there other statutes that already require this, and it would just be superfluous for us to do it?
Well, on the fact that you have the requirements on your property taxes, sales taxes, and all these limitations by the Department of Taxation, that you can't go above limits on certain things. I think that we have, four agencies that we talk about, CAFRTRs, auditors, everybody else monitoring all this, and we do have NRSs, I think, that limit us on property taxes and things. And we're sort of limited, and I don't think it needs just to be readdressed in another document.
It is required by NRS, but I'm not sure right now what the NRS is specifically. But before we issue any debt, it has to go through the Debt Management Commission. Also, it has to be approved by the Department of Taxation. And then it goes to our board two times before we can issue debt.
And are those commissions regulated by the language in our charter or by other statutes outside of these limits that are in our charter?
Both.
Okay.
I would say they're subject to all those provisions.
Okay.
And to answer your question directly, I don't know that there is a specific requirement of Nevada law that does exactly what the proposal you're considering does. There are certainly provisions about reporting debt and all that, but directly answering your question, I don't think there is a specific provision that duplicates the exact nature of the request.
Well, I would say then, I think like Larry said, it probably isn't a bad idea if we as a city wanted to, you know, say as part of our charter we're going to publish a document. But the compliance part of this was a line item for every debt, and I'm just not sure that it has to be, you know, that detailed. I don't know what kind of transparency this item is looking for, but it might be something worth us, you know, acting upon. I don't know how we do that. A motion not to recommend to the board, you know, that we discussed it. I think it's possibly a viable idea that if there isn't some other avenue where this is required by the city to provide a document, we can't say, here it is. I can see where there might be members of the public say, hey, doesn't our city have a requirement or a charter that sells it, we're under the debt limit? So it might be worthwhile to at least talk about and act on. But.
Bruce, it seems to me it's already done a number of times, 3 to 4 different places, even though it's not in the charter. And if there's not a problem, it seems like it would also add an extra expense, too. It would be costly to do this. So why add another layer on there when it's already being done?
Any other comment? If not, take public comment at this time. No public comment. Does anybody wish to make a motion?
I motion that we table this request and, I guess, void it at this point or reject it. So.
Do we have a second? I think the motion is to reject
the request, yeah.
Request.
Or take no action.
No action is fine. So
is that
no action.
He's not recommending?
Right, yes.
I'll second it. I'll second it. Taking no action.
Well, we don't need a vote to take no action, do we?
Right.
Yeah.
No.
No.
All right. Failing any motion, there will be no action on this item. Moving on to the next item, 6C, it's to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to Section 2.330 of the Charter to add the language, the Board will establish annual performance criteria for the manager to be incorporated with his slash her employment contract. The Board shall, in concert with the manager, establish annual performance criteria for all non-elected department heads. Submitted by Chris Carver. And on this item, there's no legal analysis from the district attorney's office. Any comment? Larry?
I think in the city manager's contract, it calls for an annual performance review, and there are criteria set for that performance review in the contract. And I know that we do that performance review every year, so I don't know. I'm not sure what this would accomplish beyond what we already do.
I would assume, Nick, that you review the non-elected department heads annually anyhow, correct?
I do. Nick Morano, city manager. Member Messina is correct. As part of my employment contract, the city does establish on an annual basis specific performance criteria for my evaluation. We get together and update our city strategic plan, and nested in that overall strategic plan are all department goals and objectives, of which I derive my specific performance criteria for the department directors who report to me. So the Board of Supervisors at the policy level establishes not only my performance evaluation criteria, but they establish the framework by which I evaluate the department directors who report to me. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's currently how we do it.
No, thank you. I think that does answer the question. Is there any other comment from the board?
Well, when I look at Section 2.330 of the Charter, the supervisor shall establish a merit personnel system. So I don't know if that's the same or different than what this request is concerning a performance criteria. I would assume it's the same unless the requester has an explanation that's different. The manager's office and some other department heads are exempted from it. But I don't think we could adopt it the way it's written, because we already have a merit personnel system in our charter that applies in general.
But I think it goes right to that item number four, that sub-item where, once again, the charter, you know, governs what the board shall do. And per our charter, they shall establish a merit personnel system for all employees except for the manager and the department heads. I think that's what this request is, that part of the charter is that they establish it. And we already do it, but I don't think it's necessary. I think it would be cumbersome. I think it would be difficult to get somebody to pick this up at the legislature and sponsor it. I just don't think it's worth the effort. I think we're doing it. But I think this is another one of those requests where they're trying to put a policy or a procedure into our charter, and I think we have to be careful doing those kinds of things.
Any other comments from the board? If not, we'll take public comment. Any public comment? None. So does anybody want to take action on this item, or just dies from no action? Dies from no action, then.
Well, can I speak to that for a second, just in some discussion here? These folks have gone to a little bit of effort, and they've thought about some things to bring to the Charter Review Committee an item for us to discuss and to talk about. And I think if we say it dies for lack of motion, and this is where you might have to give me a little bit of education, I think we'd be probably better served if we're in concurrence, or if we believe that this should not be brought forth, it would be better for us to make a motion not to recommend it to the board. And I don't know if that's parsing it a little bit too much and saying, you know, we would rather, you know, because if we don't make a motion not to recommend it and take a positive action that way, can it come back? Can they say, you didn't do your due diligence, you just
it died for lack of motion, or should we be more deliberate and say, you know, I move not to recommend this item to the board? I'm looking for some help here with that.
And I don't really have any to give. Legally, you can do either way. If you are not inclined to adopt a recommendation or adopt a recommendation with modifications, it can die for a lack of motion, or it can be affirmatively rejected. So you can do whatever you want in that regard.
Well, I think our comments and our discussion is recorded, so someone can see that we did consider the action and decided not to go forward with it.
With the effort here, can we send them a letter saying that we took no actions on your following recommendations as a matter of courtesy?
Yeah, I think we can do that. We could actually send them a copy of our minutes, and that should suffice, I would think.
Okay, that's just a matter of courtesy, we talked about the effort that these individuals have done, so we'd like to let them know that we looked at it and decided not to.
I have a question of you, Jason, though, and Keith brings up a good point, and it happened at the last charter review. We had a number of items presented to us, and we took no action on some, and they kept coming back. So are we subject to that on, say, this item? Can it come back if we don't take action on it?
Yeah, and that's a fair point. If you did take action on it and rejected it, the only way that it could come back is if you affirmative, if one board member who voted in favor of the rejection moved to reconsider the matter. If you don't take any action, then it can just come back. So that is a technical difference between the two.
It's unfortunate that Mr. Carver isn't here to discuss this issue, to tell you the truth, but I'm kind of in preference that we do take action so these items don't continue to come back. And it was a, I mean, we had several items that came back three times in the last 2 years ago when we met. So I would entertain a motion that we reject this.
I so move.
Can I just add something real quick? Being that I'm new at doing this, I don't know how often this has happened in the past. But it would have been very useful to me if part of the possible action that had been submitted, if the question as to why, that would have been useful to me to understand, especially when somebody's not here, what the nature of this action is for. That's just a suggestion.
Second on the motion.
Any further discussion? If no, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And that's a good point, Kim. You know, I'll get with Janet and ask if she can't have an answer on those. When they're submitted, I think it would be helpful.
Given the idea of what is there, has there been a previous problem, or is there an ongoing problem to these issues?
No. Typically, when an action is presented, the person is here to talk to it, and we hear the why. Nick, is that doable through Janet's desk?
Doable in terms of notifying all the people who submitted recommended items. Yeah, we did. We went back and notified all of them. The only one who responded affirmatively was Mr. Knighton for the first item that you looked at, and he told Janet he wasn't going to be able to make the meeting. Neither Supervisor Shirk nor Mr. Carver responded, but they were all notified about the meeting today and that their item was going to be looked at by this committee.
All right. We'll move on to the next item, 6D, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the Charter regarding the term in the interest of the general public to be defined by geography, demography, or some quantifiable term. And I'm not quite clear where he's going with this. Does anybody have any ideas?
I would need a reference to the section in the Charter that we're supposed to be looking at, and I don't have it.
I agree. I looked for where that might be, you know, where in the charter it says in the interest of the general public, and I didn't, you know, I didn't go through the whole document, but I tried to see if there was a definitions section, and I think it's really ambiguous, and I don't know what it's in reference to.
My problem is if you try to define it narrowly, then you end up having more problems in the future when something else comes up. So how far do you narrow it at this point?
And I might add that it, in the very beginning of our charter, the incorporated boundaries of Carson City are defined, and I think that's what our charter relates to. So, you know, in the interest of the general public, it is in that geographical area. And, you know, I think it's already defined. And so if I were to make a motion not to recommend this to the board, it would be based on the fact that it's already defined.
I go along with that reasoning. And as it's written now, it's the charter is actually inclusive of everybody's interests as a general good for the population. And if you start dividing it, then you actually become almost discriminatory to certain areas or whatever. And to segments of the community. So I think it's good the way it's written now.
Do we have any public comment? Seeing none, do we have a motion to reject this item?
I'll make a motion. I move not to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the charter regarding the term, quote, in the interest of general public, unquote, to be defined by geography, demography, or some quantifiable term.
Second.
And we have a second. Any other further comment? If not, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion passes. Moving to item 6E, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to section 2.180 of the Charter to revise the language regarding a pound keeper to reflect that the Board may contract or appoint an animal services officer, submitted by Chris Carver. Comments from the board.
I guess I wasn't sure what we're trying to accomplish here, because I thought we had a pound and we thought we had it staffed and we have supervision there and we have solved the issues. I think of that one dog being terminated early. And do we need anybody else added to the layer of operation? And changing a name is changing a name, so.
And haven't we contracted with a company to run the animal services?
We have, Mr. Chair. We have the Nevada Humane Society currently provides animal control services for us. This would include what I believe Mr. Carver intends by the pound keeper. The former chief deputy district attorney at the time that we brought the Humane Society in, that would have been September or October 2014. Randy Munn did an opinion on this exact claim that the city was not able under either NRS or our existing charter to contract out the animal control part of that contract. Again, the chief deputy DA at the time did an opinion, and the research that he conducted led him to believe that we were able to do it in accordance with NRS and the existing charter.
Any further board comment?
Yeah, I find this request to be a little bit vague. Also, the way that I interpreted the request was just to reflect in section 2.180 of our charter that we do not have a pound keeper, essentially, but are contracting it out. I'm not sure that change is necessary because, again, this authorizes the board to appoint a pound keeper. This 2.180 does not prohibit the board from contracting the service, does not mandate a pound keeper the way that I see it, and does not prohibit the board from contracting it out. And if other provisions of the charter, as opined by the district attorney's office, give the board the authority to contract it out, I think we already have these provisions in our charter, and no change is necessary.
Do we have any public comment? Seeing none, do we have a motion to reject this request?
I move to not recommend to the Board of Supervisors that we change the language regarding the pound keeper.
Second.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. Motion passes. Moving to item 6F, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to section 2.320 of the Charter to remove the section wherein advisory boards may be comprised of elected officials. And that we do have comment from the District Attorney's Office on this request.
Yeah, Jason Woodbury, DA. And our comment is that the proposal as it's phrased is not something that could be done. You can't remove entirely elected officials from this charter provision because of the fact that certain provisions of Nevada law require that the Board of Supervisors appoint individual members. For one example, the RTC requires that two members of the Regional Transportation Commission be members of the Board of Supervisors. It could be accomplished in a different way if this body were to determine that as a policy matter, as it wanted the charter to reflect that it didn't want board members appointed to advisory boards and those things. You could restructure the proposal as except as otherwise required by law, no member of the Board of Supervisors shall be appointed to any board of Carson City. But as this proposal is phrased, it wouldn't be consistent with Nevada law.
Larry?
I happen to like the way it is now. I think that there's a lot of value to an advisory board to have a member of the Board of Supervisors on that board to give that perspective. I also think it's valuable to the Board of Supervisors to have had one member on an advisory board to give more of a feeling on the tone of the meeting and whatever they're bringing. So I think having a Board of Supervisors member on those committees is of value.
Any other board comments?
No, I agree with that. That the rest of the board has to determine how the people feel out there with the committees, and I think the board member representing it to the board helps. So.
The request is submitted is even broader than that, though. It's to prohibit any elected official from sitting on an advisory board. And ostensibly, there's going to be a public safety commission. The sheriff would be prohibited from sitting on the advisory board. If there was going to be a committee to review new tax proposals, an assessor would be prohibited from sitting on the advisory committee. I think at a certain point, it's counterproductive to draw a blanket rule that no elected officials can sit on an advisory committee.
Do we have any public comment? Seeing none, do we have a motion? We have a motion before us. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Motion passes. Moving to item 6G. To recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the charter regarding changing the oversight of the Chief of Alternative Sentencing to the courts slash judges, submitted by Jim Shirk. And I believe we have comment from the district attorney.
You do, Mr. Chairman, and we've set it out in that memorandum. Originally, or for a number of years, the Carson City Department of Alternative Sentencing was actually under the supervision of the courts. That changed in 2013 as a result of some legislation that was enacted that took the Department of Alternative Sentencing and made it, well, the chief is appointed by the Board of Supervisors and is really a city department and a city executive department supervised by the city manager. That is consistent, more consistent with the concept of separation of powers that Department of Alternative Sentencing is engaged in, for one, monitoring court orders, but really it's a law enforcement function that they are performing, that could be problematic if that department was under the direct supervision of a different branch, the judicial branch of government. It's possible that there would be a way to structure the duties of the department in a way that was consistent with separation of powers and allowed for judicial oversight, but it would be a drastically different department than what exists today, basically a law enforcement agency. You would have to take it out of Chapter 211A, the legislation that created it, because you can't really have the Board of Supervisors appointing the chief and the judges actually supervising the work that is done. So it creates a potential separation of powers issue. It would require a pretty drastic change from what exists today. That would be kind of our legal input on that.
This goes to Member Fagan's point about why. If Supervisor Shirk were here to explain it, that would be better. I don't know why he would want to do this or why we would want to do it.
Any other board comments? If not, any public comment? Seeing none, do we have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to reject.
Second.
All right. Motion before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Can I just ask a quick question? Are we continuing to make these motions to reject, or are we continuing to make these motions to not recommend? I'm confused as to where we ended that.
I think we've been saying reject, but I think that accomplishes the same thing either way.
Okay.
Jason, are we okay with that?
Yeah, I don't see any substantive distinction between how okay. That's phrased.
Okay.
Thank you. Moving to item 6H. To recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the Charter regarding the appointment of members of the Community Development Block Grant Application Review Work Group, submitted by Supervisor Jim Shirk. And I'm not clear what the request is here.
I guess so. I read that he wanted it to be open to the public for public. It's not a public meeting, so he wants to make it a public meeting. Is that right on that?
No, it currently is open to the public, but the members are appointed by the community development director. So there's an enormous difference in policy and also from a statutory point of view. If the Board of Supervisors appointed the members, then it would be a public body in accordance with the Nevada open meeting law. So that's really the key distinction. The meetings are open to the public. From time to time, members of the public, especially the potential grantees, all the grantees are there. They make their case in front of the board. Then the board does bring all their recommendations to a Board of Supervisors meeting, who then approves, disapproves, or modifies whatever the recommendations were from that body. But the key distinction would be it is not a public body in accordance with the Nevada open meeting law, unlike if the Board of Supervisors, under Supervisor Shirk's recommendation, that would, in my opinion, be the key distinction here.
In going back to a previous item, if it were to be that kind of a board, wouldn't there need to be a requirement that a member of the Board of Supervisors sit on that board per the NRS or
no, that wouldn't be a requirement. They
okay.
They could do that, but
okay.
That wouldn't be a requirement.
All right.
Would the character of the board change if the supervisors appoint the members versus the head of the grant people you were just talking about appoints his the people?
It would be another board similar to the one that you're sitting on here. It would. It. I mean, typically it's the same type of people who volunteer for these type of boards. So in the end, I think, again, the key distinction is having the Board of Supervisors created creates another public body that has to function in accordance with the open meeting law.
Okay. Now, I'm just curious if same people were going to end up on the board, it doesn't seem to matter if Mr. Shirk decided that maybe the board would change because there's some bias of the head of the grant people are appointing their friends to the board that would be
sure. And I think
sympathetic
to
them.
Yeah. So. To be objective here, I think almost certainly the makeup of the board would change if the board members, if the Board of Supervisors members were determining who sits on this board. Okay. I think that's absolutely correct.
Yeah, just curious.
Do we have any other similar work groups in the city that are appointed in a similar fashion as this?
We do have other type. We're actually putting together a similar one to look at streets maintenance. To help us prioritize and evaluate where the most effective use of our street maintenance dollars will be. So, I mean, this isn't without precedence in terms of having a city staff, in this case, the community development director, put together a board that's going to look at, you know, the CDBG program.
Thanks. That answers my question. I think this is way out of the purview of a charter. I work groups in the city, and my goodness, somewhere along the line, you've got to be able to function as a city and get the public involved without making it a matter of legislative, you know, a BDR to say we're going to appoint the work groups. Because if you did it with this one, now you're going to set a precedence that maybe we need to do it with others. And that would just become cumbersome, in my opinion.
It does just seem to add another layer of bureaucracy, actually, that's already being done, taken care of otherwise.
I also think that if that board became so biased that the city supervisors can put pressure back onto the director and say, hey, we're hearing too many complaints that this is favoritism at that point.
Any other board comments? If not, we'll have public comment. No public comment. So do we have a motion?
I'll move to not recommend or to reject, whatever you want, to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the charter regarding appointment of members to the Community Development Block Grant Application Review Work Group.
Second. We have a second. All right, motion before us. All those in favor, vote by saying aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion passes. Moving on to item 6I, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an amendment to the charter regarding impaneling the grand jury, submitted by Jim Shirk, and I believe we also have a comment from the district attorney's office.
Jason Woodbury, district attorney, and it's laid out. I won't bore you with the details, but there's very specific Nevada law, legal provisions that address how you impanel a grand jury. It's comprehensively regulated, and there's actually a constitutional prohibition saying that procedure needs to be applicable statewide. Carson City can't have its own special way of impaneling a grand jury. So this is one that as it's proposed, is just not constitutional and beyond the purview of this body.
Board comments? Public comment? If not, do we have a motion?
I move to recommend that we not recommend that we impanel a grand jury.
Second?
Second.
Okay, the motion before us. All those in favor, vote by. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion passes. Moving to item 6J, discussion on any new agenda item and discussion of future meeting dates and possible direction to staff. Nick.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm kind of smiling right now because I'm not sure what to say at this point because it looks like most of the agenda items have been cleared. I didn't know if at the end of this point you were going to direct us to come back and get more information on something. I do need to report to you, Mr. Chair, that the June date that we had selected is not going to be available in this room, which, again, looking at the cleared agenda now that you have, I don't know if that's going to be a problem. We do need to do a joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors at the end of your term, so we could put that together at a June meeting with the board. That would be my recommendation in place of the June meeting that we'd already scheduled. We can get together and have that joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors. But at this point, it looks like all of the agenda items that at least we had, you've taken action on in terms of not recommending. So
there could be other items submitted between now and our next meetings, correct?
There can.
Meaning that have we published these, at least in the meeting minutes, we published these dates, but I don't know how widely they've been published that we were planning on meeting on these dates. And so if some entity had a recommendation that didn't come before us on this meeting, maybe they're, you're not suggesting we don't meet again until June, that we continue to meet on these dates for whatever reason, just because we published that, or, and then just the June one would be combined with the supervisors?
Well, I mean, that's up to the committee, frankly. I mean, if there's no agenda items for you to consider,
there's no reason to meet.
Right.
I would like to ask the board if it's their pleasure if we revisit items 6, A, B, and C, because we did not take motions on those.
Yes.
And I think we should, to be consistent with the other items that were submitted.
Even as a matter of housekeeping, it seems like it would be smart to do it now.
Well, Mr. Chair, we actually, since you've closed those items, we can't do that at this meeting.
Okay.
You could do it, you could re-agendize them for a future meeting, but because they've been closed, we can't open those back up at this time.
And if we don't re-agendize the meetings and nobody brings them up, we can consider them dead at that point? And
well, they died for lack of motion, and you could certainly explain to the Board of Supervisors, you know, that.
So I guess going forward with the future meeting dates, they're on the calendar. If there's no agenda items, there's no reason to have a meeting. Is that how we proceed?
Well, I think if you wanted to revisit those, I know they died because of a lack of motion, but I'm not one for meeting just for the sake of meeting. But if we wanted to hold the May 4th meeting, and hold a quick meeting and let Mr. Carver know, that we, you know, that those items died for lack of motion, which means that he could reinstitute them again and we could move on them. And that might give others an opportunity to bring something forth if there is going to be something come forth, but I don't know.
I guess I'd just leave them alone, and if we have a May 4th meeting and if so many days beforehand we can cancel the meeting if there's been no, I would assume we can't, if there's been no agenda items for that. And if somebody's interested to try to bring it back, they could bring it back and let us know about it.
We're running out of noticing time for the May 4th meeting. It might be better to do that on a May 26th or something meeting just before we go to the Board of Supervisors. It might be good for us to meet one more time, maybe May 26th, and then a combined meeting with the board.
Well, I think we would take a recommendation from staff on that. Would it be easier to cancel these meetings and then schedule a new meeting if we had a late request come in, or just leave these meetings on date and cancel them if we needed to? It seems like it's probably easier to leave them and cancel them if there are no agenda items.
Right. It if you remember, it's pretty hard deconflicting all seven of your calendars. So I would recommend if you're going to cancel a meeting, I would concur that probably the earlier May meeting would be the one to cancel, continue with a second meeting in May, and that way we do have plenty of time if you if you do determine that you're going to cancel that meeting as well, we can put that notification out. And then we can look at, if you're able to look at your calendar for June, to look at one of the two board meetings where we could schedule a joint meeting with this committee and the Board of Supervisors. What's the pleasure of the chair? Do you want to do that?
And what are the dates in June of the supervisor?
Right. Yeah, June. Hang on 1 second. My computer's hanging up here. Yeah, June 2nd and June 16th.
Board comments, are there any, is one date better than the other for, is everybody here on both those dates? I would suggest maybe the June 16th, if you think that's appropriate.
That'd be fine.
That's fine with me.
I was out that week anyway of our June 14th meeting. I won't be there, yeah. But that doesn't matter.
Well, then I would like to entertain a motion that we cancel our May 4th meeting and schedule, within that motion, schedule to meet concurrently with the Board of Supervisors on the 16th of June. Would somebody like to make that motion?
I will motion that we cancel our May 4th meeting and our June 14th meeting and change and meet with the city supervisors on June 16th.
Second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Anything else that the board wishes to discuss at this point?
I have a question. I thought that we originally came up with these four dates because we had a requirement to meet a certain amount of times.
Jason? You have to meet. I'm not aware of any requirement that you meet a certain number of times.
Okay.
You are required to meet, though.
I think, Kim, in the past we've had about this that many number of meetings because we had items that we couldn't handle all in one meeting and or new items got submitted after the first meeting.
Okay, so what do we do if new items are submitted? We're just going to, we'll entertain that on the 26th?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. No other business for the board. We stand adjourned.